The following episode of Annals on Call is brought to you by Annals of Internal Medicine. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and participants during this episode are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the American College of Physicians, the editors of Annals of Internal Medicine, or the institutions that the speakers are affiliated with unless so identified. All relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall.
Inherently a problem that there's always descaling, and the question is, how do you mitigate it, and how do you make sure that you're taking good care of your patients? So I agree with the authors, is what I'm saying.
Welcome to Annals on Call, a podcast based upon articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine, in which we discuss the implications of the article for you, the listener. This is Dr. Bob Centaur. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and former Chair of the Board of Regents for the American College of Physicians.
This episode of Annals on Call features an article titled, "The De-skilling Effect: Is Artificial Intelligence Eroding Clinical Competence?" Joining us on the podcast to discuss this article is Dr. Adam Rodman, who is an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and medical educator at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. We hope that the discussion we have of this article will help you better understand the challenges and benefits of learning about artificial intelligence in medicine. Adam, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I thought of you after I read this article because I needed somebody who knew more about artificial intelligence than me, and Claude was busy that day.
Oh, no. Maybe Claude was taken away by the U.S. government, I imagine, at that point.
Only partly. Okay, enough of the inside AI jokes. This article is interesting because it accuses the use of AI with de-skilling. And I have to explain de-skilling to people. I'm going to let you just explain de-skilling and then explain the colonoscopy study that they use to say that maybe using AI is going to make us worse physicians.
Yeah, so de-skilling, along with the ideas of never-skilling or mis-skilling, are actually quite old ideas. They've gotten a lot more credence lately. And the whole idea of cognitive de-skilling is that the use of any technology, so not explicit to AI, but the use of any sort of technology because of cognitive offloading, because yes, use it or lose it, right? You no longer use a certain cognitive ability, it atrophies over time. And de-skilling has been well described. I mean, famously in Phaedrus, so this is one of the Socratic dialogues, there is this concern that the origin, that inventing writing has changed the way that we think about knowledge and arguing, and you can no longer know if it's a man's original thoughts. So we've been complaining about de-skilling for thousands of years. The historian and internist Andrew Lay wrote a great piece in New England Journal AI recently, looking at debates in the 1950s, Bob, so like pocket guides, right? When pocket guides came out in the post-World War II period, there was an equal amount of like moral panic about de-skilling from that. So de-skilling is very old, and I think it has come up again with generative AI because it is a general purpose technology. So now there's new concerns about, rather than specific de-skilling, general purpose de-skilling. And as you mentioned, do you want me to go on the colonoscopy study?
Yeah. Talk about the colonoscopy study and make clear to the audience, not everybody knows what you mean by generative AI. So,
oh, yes.
Describe generative AI first.
So artificial intelligence is very old, including in medicine and diagnostics. Some might argue that Dr. Centaur here created a very early artificial intelligence system, right? So back in the 1950s, risk calculators, before the term clinical decision support existed, were seen as artificial intelligence. So AI, very old. But for example, if you are using old sort of expert systems or Bayesian systems, could help you with a single decision. So like the Centaur criteria is helping with a single decision. And there wasn't as much concern about de-skilling that single decision. Modern artificial intelligence systems those that are trained on transformers and create text or images or audio are generative, meaning they can generate new content and they can do many, many, many different things. They're not bound to a single task like a classification system or a Bayesian algorithm is. And therefore, the concerns are that they can descale many, many different many different phenomena, including, well, I'm doing air quotes here, but clinical reasoning. So including the whole amalgam of how doctors use information and collect information to make decisions about patients. Was that a decent explanation?
Perfect. So now we have this colonoscopy study that bothered the people who wrote this article.
Yeah. So the colonoscopy study is a subgroup analysis of the ACCEPT trial. So some context here. There is a type of technology called an automated polyp detection. And this is not a generative AI technology. So I think I need to make that very clear. This is one of those machine learning classification technologies. It is a convolutional neural network. And what they have done is they have trained it on millions of polyps. And some of those polyps are labeled benign, and some of them are non-benign. And what the system does, if you've ever seen it in real life, you do the colonoscopy, you see a polyp, and if it's benign, meaning close to 100% chance of being benign, it puts like a green box around it. And otherwise, it puts a red box and you sample. So in Europe, colonoscopy is less common for colon cancer screening than in the United States. They're more like the immunochemical, the FIT testing, or just the GWIAC cards. So they're doing a randomized control trial of colonoscopies along with the ADR, the automated polyp detection. And in a part of this study in Poland, they did a really interesting study design. So at four different hospitals, they gave the system to all of the endoscopists. So everybody got it. But what they then did is randomized on a per patient basis. So a patient comes in, and then you're randomized whether you use the system or not. So even though every doctor is training how to use it, they don't use it every time. And what they were able to do in this study is look at the baseline polyp detection rate and then the polyp detection rate unaided when using the system after just 3 months. So they're able to act methodological quibbles with the study. I still think it's a pretty good study. But what they're able to do is actually say, well, we can not only tell you how good your polyp detection is when using this, but what happens to you after you stop using it? And what they found, the headline result, is the absolute, not relative, absolute reduction in polyp detection decreased by 6%. The degree to which this is clinically meaningful is not known yet. Obviously, these studies go on for a long time, but that is a huge decrease. Now, caveats, like the rates were much lower than American rates. Not all of these were screening colonoscopies. These were also colonoscopies done for other purposes. So I think there's a lot of reasons that we can say it's not a perfect study. But the authors of this Annals piece, like many other people, are pointing to this as the first explicit and measurable way that a powerful AI system can lower human performance when it's taken away.
So this is a very specific study. I think they make the case that this could translate to everything we do. Are they stretching it out too far? What's your opinion?
So the authors, and they cite some of the other literature, actually cite a piece from New England Journal AI, but they also cite one of our studies that we published in, I believe it was in Pakistan, of a clinical reasoning study of when the AI system was designed to intentionally give doctors bad data. Doctors who used AI more were unable to like double check the AI system. So it was actually the doctors who used AI less who were better able to know when the AI was telling you wrong. So I think that if you look at fields other than medicine, so if you look at higher education or you look at the older literature around autopilots, aviation, and industrial safety, I think the authors are fundamentally correct in this idea that powerful technologies that are cognitive in nature cause de-skilling. So I think they're on the right base, and I largely agree with the way the problem is described. I like the Annals piece also because I think the authors themselves recognize that de-skilling isn't inherently a problem, that there's always de-skilling. And the question is, how do you mitigate it and how do you make sure that you're taking good care of your patients? So I agree with the authors is what I'm saying.
Could this lead to never-skilling?
Oh, great question. And do you want me to define never-skilling?
Yeah, never-skilling. I think you can do that.
Yeah, so never-skilling, we'll go back to the colonoscopy example. Those were all experienced endoscopists who had the decrease in their adenoma detection rate. Imagine if there were a first-year GI fellow who was training with that technology. Would they ever gain the skills that are necessary to even be de-skilled if they always relied on the system? And taking that another step away, if you have medical students and early trainees who are using generative AI to help with their differentials or their management plans, will they ever gain the ability to do that in the first place? And therefore, will they ever gain the ability to work in a system where they are expected to oversee or collaborate in a meaningful fashion with an AI system? And that's never skilling. And Bob, your question was, will we see never skilling?
Yeah.
I think that's up to us. Some of the data on writing is very grim in higher ed, which is that like AI assisted writing effectively leads to never gaining the skills to write. Sometimes people can't even recognize what they quote unquote wrote with AI a few weeks later. Like the ideas are just gone from their brain. That being said, these are problems that other fields have faced, like aviation has faced this, and there are training mechanisms that we know of where we can mitigate or prevent never skilling. So I think there's a risk of never skilling. That's the worst case scenario, is that we roll out this technology in such a way that we never skill a generation. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, and I'm actually pretty optimistic. And I don't know your experience. I just got off the wards
Yeah.
with the newbies, the new interns, and I have not noted never skilling. Like I find obviously there have been changes in the last, my hair's gray, changes in the last 10 years plus, but I think that my trainees are as enthusiastic and curious as they've ever been.
Well, so they postulate that educators using AI will decrease our capacity to model expert reasoning. I don't believe that to be true, and I'm a huge AI addict. When I'm on rounds and I don't know, can't
Same.
remember something, I pull out an AI product and look at it.
And same, if I'm stumped for something, I will model how I talk to the AI, and then we will look at the outputs. Often we do it in the room with the patient and then go back and ask additional questions or do additional physical exams based on what the AI is helping us think. And to me, that's a great way to model reasoning. It's just modeling reasoning from a artificial intelligence.
So, what I think we're both doing is what we used to do when I was an intern many years ago is we'd go find Harrison's and try to find the right chapter.
Yeah.
And then UpToDate came out and you still had to try to find the right chapter. And then sometimes you would just Google and sometimes you could find stuff. And now with a lot of these AI programs, you can ask a very specific question. And get a much more specific answer. Now, the only thing you have to be careful about is you need to know when the AI is hallucinating. And so you can't assume that everything, and we should teach this, and I'm sure you do as I do. I don't believe everything the AI says. It depends on how you ask the question and how much they want to please you, because AI is designed to try to please the person talking to the AI. So you have to put in some things that make it say, okay, don't try to please me, or what could be wrong with this idea? And then you really start to get a good conversation going and you learn something. How are you using AI in your medical education, and what do you think it means for everybody who's listening to this, and for those of us who teach? Which is most physicians are teaching somebody, is how we teach.
So Dr. Santor, I think I do something remarkably similar to you. So the psychological principle of what you're describing, and I think how I use it, is what creative problem solving, right? So first, I use AI, as I'm sure you do, as a reference material sometimes, right? Like when I'm using open evidence, it's because I'm like, well, I don't remember what the GFR cutoff for like dose reducing Bactrim is. Let's look that up quickly. It's something that I would easily be able to do on UpToDate or LexiComp or Harrison's or my pocket guide. It's just faster. So I think it's important to talk about reference uses different than this sort of decision support. And when I do decision support, I treat it the same way you do, which is not to tell me what to do, but to help me myself reframe a problem, meaning that there's a lot of AI literacy that goes into that, right? It's how do I describe the problem to the system in a way that doesn't bias it, that reduces the sycophancy of just telling me what I already think? How do I have it structure outputs to me that actually make me better. I will tell you, my neurologic exam has gotten a lot better with ChatGPT. Traditionally, you know, internists always have this problem. We're very scared of the neurologic exam. But now I go in, I describe what's going on with the patient, sometimes on my phone, and then I will have the language model basically teach me what my gaps are, do the neurologic exam, feed it back to the model, and help it refine my thinking. So this is, in psychology, it's collective intelligence, creative problem solving. It's helping me myself reframe the way I think about a problem. And I try to model that to my residents, mostly just by showing them of what good ways. And I have noticed many residents use it the same. Like a lot of my residents, when they're using AI, it doesn't scare me. I'm like, that's a really cool use, or you should be using it if you're like stumped and you're looking for the right questions to ask.
And one of the things that I tell people at the end of rounds every day is, what are the two most important things you think you learned today? And which is usually from a conversation. And then I ask them to go to AI for 2 to 5 minutes and read about it. Because if they read about it right then, after we just talked about it, they're more likely to remember it. And so you can use it as an additional learning aid. And I think we do have to be careful that we are able to model taking a history, doing a physical exam, and putting the information together, at least in some reasonable thought process.
Yeah, this actually, I think the authors of the Annals piece kind of get to this. What you're getting at is this sort of synthesis process, right? You don't want the synthesis to be offloaded to the AI. There are certain cognitive tasks that we don't want to offload. And we know the research is pretty clear on this, how to build expertise to take care of our patients. And those are the things that we want to protect. And it sounds like that's what you're doing with your team.
Well, Adam, it's a pleasure to have had this conversation with you. I think it's really useful because AI is not going away. And so it's our job as medical educators to know how to use it for the benefit of both the patients and the learners and the next iteration of patients. Because as we get more and more patients, we'll be replaced by the people who lived in AI their entire career. And hopefully we can do something about it. So thanks a lot for joining the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Now it's time for Bob's Pearls. This discussion raises some very interesting points. It's interesting to realize that the concept of de-skilling is not a new concept. Seems to be whenever there's a new technology of any kind, people worry about what it does to us. This concept of de-skilling is a challenge to medical educators because that is where you start to learn your thought process. And it's our job as medical educators to help our learners still learn how to think through a problem, to know when it is appropriate to use AI for a little extra knowledge, but still be aware of the cognition that is necessary in order to be good at being an internist. What this really tells me is that we need to learn how to use AI. We need to realize you can't believe everything AI says. I've found many mistakes in AI because I look for them. I've learned to ask the AI to look for their own mistakes, and they often will find them for you. And so this is the future of learning and practicing medicine. We shouldn't be scared of it, but we should become experts at learning how to use it in the best possible way. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall